This season, we have teamed up with FansBet, the fan-led sports betting company committed to supporting charities and causes which are important to fans. Do check them out at fansbet.com and claim your bet £10, get £10 free. Welcome offer. To claim your welcome offer, visit register.fansbet.com/backofthenest. Our chosen charity partner is Sports in Mind, and by using FansBet, you'll be helping us support the great work they do. Terms and restrictions apply. Full details on site. 18 plus only. Please do gamble responsibly. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And please check out FansBet's responsible gambling tools.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm your host Chris Hambling, and my panel and I are here to look back at Palace's first defeat in seven games. Despite a late consolation goal from Mark Gay, it was an uncharacteristically poor display from Vieira's Eagles against a Villa side enjoying a new manager bounce under Steven Gerrard. Goals from Target and McGinn were enough to take the points. Okay, with me today I have Nick Gillard. Hello, Nick.
Hello. Back after my week off.
Well, you know, it's important to take a break, isn't it?
It is. I did nothing last Sunday. It was fantastic. Didn't know what to do with myself, I tells you.
Well, it's there good to you be go. Back. Yeah, it's great to be back, isn't it? And you've chosen a wonderful game to return, as have I. I had to have a self-imposed break to some degree last week, which wasn't intentional, but timing is difficult at the moment. Moving house and all that, but I'll come back to that later on, I'm sure, because we've got a question from a listener on it, which is interesting. So, hey, you can have an update then. Also joined by Chris Clark. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Hambo. How you doing?
I'm wonderful, mate. Yep. Could have done with a slightly better performance, but how about you?
Well, today I've been feeling very similar to the way that the lads turned out on the pitch, i.e. sluggish and rubbish. I might have had a couple of drinks to commiserate after the game and have been feeling it all day. But definitely great to be back on the show for a second week running. And yeah, can't quite say looking forward to talking through this. And frankly, I've been dreading it. But, at least we'll get a chance to commiserate and see if we can find some light in the darkness.
Yeah, but the only real consolation for me about the game was didn't have a long drive home, having been to lots of games with Mr. Clark this season. It's only half an hour of misery rather than hours of DR moaning about it. So that was one consolation. Let's just hope Leeds on Tuesday is a bit better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want hours of DR moaning about it, you only have to pop over to YouTube anyway. So if you're missing that. So do check that out as well. And the guys do wonderful, wonderful work over there on YouTube as well. If you haven't yet engaged with it, please do. Even if you think it's not something I would usually do, pop onto YouTube and watch, watch a bunch of guys I don't really know talk about Palace. Honestly, it's well worth doing. You get a variety of opinions. Some of the stuff you don't get from the panel on this show, because we can only pick a handful each week. So if you want a kind of wider view and see, there's plenty of variation in opinions from everybody at the Back of the Nest. So our narrative on this show, which isn't planned, by the way, but whatever narrative we happen to come up with today, could well differ from what you see on there. So we try to cater to all tastes, and I can't encourage you enough to go over and check out what we do on YouTube and, of course, all our social media channels. But good to have the guys on today. And as I say, very good to be back for myself. Really enjoying doing the shows this year. I think, the Patrick Vieira era has given a sort of freshness to us all. But it is interesting that we're now faced with a situation we haven't dealt with for a while, which is a defeat and also a performance that wasn't particularly inspiring, but was it as bad as it felt? You know, we've got to try and find some perspective in all this. And, you know, you can look at the stats of the match. You can look at the general performance of individuals. You can look at the team selection and the availability issues that we had. And we'll be doing all of that in just a moment. But first up, just a couple of bits to round up for you in news this week. The Palace under-23s, after smashing Liverpool 3-0 last week, beat Man United 2-1 this week. It was another strong performance. It was 1-1 at half-time. McNeil opened the scoring for Man United. But, Rakitić opened the scoring for Palace. Sorry, I've read the times wrong there. It was Rakitić who opened the scoring for Palace 2 minutes in. McNeil pegged it back after 13 minutes. And just after the half-time break, it was another early goal, with J.K. Gordon getting a goal a minute into that half. It was a third successive away win for the 23s. Paddy McCarthy going great guns, getting results from that group of players. And there's some real talent in there that we have to say. You know, you look at Rakitić, who's obviously already had exposure to the first team. And, you know, Scott Banks is in there doing really well. Jake O'Brien at the back doing superbly. The keeper, Joe Whitworth, is a real talent as well. I could probably name each and every one of the players now, in terms of them having real potential there. But, you know, it's encouraging to see some proper academy talent getting some real results against big academies, you know, big sides. And it's, you know, it could only get better, Nick.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you both, do you think that having brought in some excellent players for the first team, that the under-23s, under-18s have actually lost a bit of a chance to push into the first team now? Or do you think that having lots of matches coming up over Christmas might be their window to get in? Or do you think that Paddy's actually said, no, I'm keeping them because we're doing so well. Don't you dare take them away from me.
I think it's important that they play regularly, you know, and I think having them on the bench when it's difficult to have a player go and play in the 23s or the 18s and then have them on the bench for the first team. You can do it, but realistically, you know, you've got to weigh up what you get the most out of. I think we will have to lean into the younger players, and there will be opportunities for them. And this period we're coming up to now is that first opportunity for one or two of them to find their way onto the bench. Because, you know, it is, the games are coming thick and fast. We've picked up a couple of injuries already. And, you know, arguably there could be issues of form as well in there. And we might need to lean on a couple of these players. But the important thing for me is the opportunities are there. You know, certainly we've shown that earlier in the season. And I do think we'll show that again. But it is hard. At Premier League level, it's really hard to find the right moment to blood young players. And we've got to trust, to a degree, we've got to trust in the manager that he will do that. But I think, you know, if we go 3-4 months and you know, have a poor run and we don't lean into the academy, that might be a cause for concern. But I'm not concerned yet, Nick, but I think it's a good question. You got any views on that, Chris?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, you know, obviously you want to be giving players chances where you can, but we've got to wait and see how we're doing in the league. At the moment, you know, it's all, you know, our team has been on a pretty good run. So, you know, you feel able to do things like we've seen where Elise himself has been, you know, sliding into the first team. That wouldn't have happened last year under Roy. So, you know, it's good to see the younger players getting a chance. And you want to see the, you know, the 23s starting to edge in once we know that we're comfortable enough. But I think that you need to be risk averse with that at the moment and, you know, prioritise, as you said, making sure that they get game time regularly, because that's the only way they'll develop as players.
Yeah, exactly. And you've also got to think a little bit about, you know, we've not seen anything of Will Hughes yet. You know, I don't think Martin Kelly's played a minute, or maybe he's played come off the bench once, I'm not sure. But, you know, there's senior players who've not had minutes as well. And as you quite rightly said, Chris, that is because the team have been playing very, very well and getting good results as well as putting the performances on. So, but I'm sure there will be opportunities, excuse me, to come in the games ahead. The 18s also had a great result. They beat Villa 3-1. Excuse me. Obviously, bettering the result of the first team. Akinwale got the first goal and Ola Adebome got the next two. And I have to say, if you get an opportunity to watch it, I think the highlights are up on YouTube and Palace TV. His second goal is absolutely brilliant. I think all the goals were down to Palace doing the high press. They're really mimicking that style that Vieira's brought to the club. You know, Paddy's replicating that in the academy. He's worked with the first team, obviously, earlier on in the season. So he knows what the ask is there. He's replicating that brilliantly. And I think all three were a result of us kind of pouncing on possession in the you know, opposition's third, defensive third. And yeah, the second goal from Ole Adebomi, he sort of nicks the ball in the area, so just outside the area, cuts it back, beats a couple of players and absolutely smashes it home high above the keeper at the near post into the top corner. And it's a real great strike. And I have to say, I've not seen as much as I would like to of the 18s this year, because they are a talented bunch. And those that were talent, you know, from a talented bunch last year, have pushed into the 23s. And it's great to see the talent coming behind them. But, you know, he looks a really interesting player to me. He's a really good size for an under 18 player. And you know, he uses that to his advantage. Great pace, good feet, just the strength and the, you know, the calmness of the finish as well. I like what I see of him. And he's not one who has been talked about a tremendous amount. Obviously, Omalabu has got the headlines as a goal scorer. You know, last year I moved into the 23s. Akinwale's got a bunch of goals this year and doing really well and opened the scoring here. But he, you know, Oladipome, I think, you know, another one to look out for, which is really exciting. So if you get an opportunity to watch the 18s, do look out for him as well. But again, a great, great youth side there, getting very good results. So that's plenty of positivity there, but we do have to obviously talk about a defeat now in the Villa game. So, gents, we've got to look at the... we do, but we don't have to talk too long about it. And also, I'm not down. You know, I'm not down about it. I'm not down, Lynn. So I say a Partridge reference. I couldn't help it. But it's, you know, I think the immediate thing to talk about, I suppose, we managed without Maka last week, and we didn't look quite as good in midfield without him, and it really showed his value. And I think this week, probably even more so. So we had no James McArthur, but also, you know, Joachim Andersen, a late injury, also a hamstring injury, and we don't really know how serious it is at this stage. And Tompkins came in for his first game of the season, and we'll talk performances in a bit. But, you know, I suppose the first question to you, and I'll start with you, Chris, is when you see that squad selection, you see the choices made, they seem like logical choices to me. But, you know, do you think that it was those two things that made the difference today? The fact that we had no James McArthur in there and we went with Kouyaté and Luka doing the kind of holding roles in there with Gallagher, the kind of free role to roam. And we went for Tompkins when, you know, what are our other options? I suppose we can talk about those. But do you think that was where the game was won and lost?
I think that, alongside other elements, it was a flat performance, full stop. So I don't think it just hinges on those two players. We'll come on to other individual performances where, you know, players frankly weren't performing at their usual level, in my opinion. But it is the interaction with those two key players. McArthur, we knew, was a loss and was always going to take some replacing. But the, you know, the question is who comes in to replace him. You know, so far, Vieira has tended to get these big decisions right. So, you know, deserves the faith and the trust. That said, I was quite keen. I think a lot of people were quite keen to see Will Hughes come in and, you know, see how he gets on and how he fits in this team. But Vieira's the only one who's seeing how they're performing in training and therefore can make those decisions, you know, in terms of who he sees slotting in. With regard to Andersen, I mean, that was clearly a forced change. I think, you know, one thing that is clear is that, you know, we've been struggling with set piece organisation already, and, you know, it's hard to set up a new relationship and a new partnership very, very fast. So you were always going to be looking at either Tompkins, or I would say Kelly was the other option who could have come in there, and either one of them, it's going to be difficult to establish a partnership with the other players that quickly. But frankly, I think at the time when I saw that team sheet, I thought Tompkins was the logical replacement. In retrospect, it didn't go so well. So, you know, we'll need to talk about that. And the same with the midfield performances, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about it now, and the benefit of hindsight is always a great thing, isn't it? But you know, you start to think about the choice there. So first and foremost, Tompkins, I think he was rusty when he started the game, but I actually thought he got better as the game went on. And he certainly, you know, he's a player who's played in the Premier League in midfield in his early career. He's always been one of the better central defenders in terms of, you know, with the ball at his feet at Palace, you know, alongside the likes of Sacco when, you know, we were a very strong side with him in the middle. And obviously, whether injuries have taken their toll or not, that's a question. But I think, you know, the fact that he's not really played much with Mark Gay, has he? So there's no established partnership there. So that's also a factor. But I think when you start to look at the choices that made, and Nick, this will bring us into really talking about what happened in the midfield there. For me, you know, and perhaps a more obvious choice would have been to drop Kouyaté back into that centre-back position where, you know, he has done pretty well for us. It's not his best position. I still think he is better as a central midfielder. But with the injury to MacArthur, with how it kind of went in the middle of the park last week for spells, it just, you know, for me, I think a better choice in hindsight, as I have to mention again, would have been to drop Kouyaté back and give an opportunity in the middle there. And you could have picked any one of, you know, Riedewald or Will Hughes, or maybe one or two others. I'm, you know, Jeffrey Schlupp even. So, you know, there's options in there that we could have gone with. But, you know, what do you feel? Do you think Vieira seems to have a lot of trust in Cheick Kouyaté in central midfield? You know, and what do you think the reasons are for that?
I think that he's right to leave Kouyaté there. Just to talk about the defence, over the last few seasons, our defence hadn't changed much. So whatever combination you had, they knew each other, whether it was Mamadou Sakho and Tompkins or Dan and whoever, well, they all knew each other and they'd all played with each other enough, whoever misses, to know what they're doing. Now, Gay is quite new. He's a brilliant player. He's in the England setup, and, you know, he scored yesterday and he had a brilliant pass rate. And him and Anderson are the ones that carry the ball forward. So Kouyaté is generally the player, and as you said, he's got defensive experience, who will drop back into that defensive role while the fullbacks make their way forward a bit. So, and Kouyaté has done a very, very good job in screening the defence all season. I really think the weak link there was Milivojevic, because he wasn't... Where we've had Jimmy Mack, he's almost like having two players, isn't he? He's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr... Well, that's the wrong analogy, but he's like two players. Wrong analogy there. But he can do two roles within the game. He could be defensive as well as going forward. And actually,
I can rescue it. It's Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Jekyll's twin brother.
Yes, well done. See, what I would have done, had it been me, after a glass of wine, I'd have actually dropped Gallagher in there, because I think Gallagher's more like Maka and could actually fill that role a bit more and defend as Gallagher did towards the end of the game. And I would have said put Eze in a bit further forward, although it is too soon for him to play a full game. So that's where my theory falls apart a bit there. But whoever you put in, it's the inexperience of playing next to each other. And I think we've done well at the start of the season. And all right, I might have said on BBC London, oh, we'll finish fourth to seventh. But actually, thinking about it, the side does. And I did also say on BBC London that I think it will be next season that we see the side really, really gel once we know each other a lot. Because there's a lot of new players in that 11, isn't there? So for them to gel quickly is stretching things.
So on this topic, you know, Matt Rosenham writing in The Athletic did a little piece on why Tompkins was an issue. And it's funny, we were doing the same thing and you know, quite rightly so and understandably so as a lot of Palace fans in talking about it. And really focusing on the kind of defensive aspect, the partnership, this sort of security that you've got back there. And, you know, I still think Tompkins should have the attributes to, you know, to play that role, to play that system. And clearly the manager did too. But I think what Matt Woosnam has focused on in his article and what I think is a very valid point is what we struggled with yesterday more than anything. There wasn't too much different in how we defended and how we set up, but it was really the inability to mount meaningful attacks. And when you actually go back and look at how a lot of our attacks start or contributing passes in it, you know, one of the strongest weapons in our arsenal is Anderson's ability to hit pinpoint crossfield passes to, you know, to really put the ball on somebody's toes from the back there. And, you know, as much as he got caught a few times, you know, and he doesn't deal with the high ball over the top brilliantly, let's face it. You know, he does have weaknesses in his game that I'm sure he'll work on and get better. But, you know, it's that ability to kind of spring an attack from a fantastic crossfield pass. You know, not having that, you know, Tompkins just doesn't have that ability. He, you know, he can hit a pass, but he cannot match Joachim Andersen in that respect. So it shows that we need, you know, we do need to have that different way of playing if we're not going to have the players,
Which means we need to get somebody in the January transfer window, because you're saying, oh, Kouate could have gone in there, but Kouate doesn't. All right, he excellent cross at the end. It was the best cross of the game that led to Gaye's goal on a Palace perspective. But Kouate can't hit those long passes either. We've got Anderson with those long passes. And if a lot of our attacks are going to be that way, because let's face it, and sort of moving us forward a little bit in the game, but we found it hard to penetrate, didn't we? And we've had that quite a few times this season. The Brentford game springs to mind, where we've had a lot of the possession, but it's that final ball getting into the final third. And okay, most players were off the boil yesterday anyway, so it can't be down to that thing. I don't know. But to blame it on Tompkins, I don't think you can, because I was watching him. I thought he was quite assured and quite settled there, considering he hasn't played for such a long time.
I think, as you hinted earlier on, Chris, it's about attributes rather than individuals. So if we're saying that we want a quality pass from the rear third of the pitch, that doesn't necessarily need to be a centre-back. That could be a full-back who can do it. Or it could be, and I think probably would be, given our squad, more likely to be a defensive midfielder or a player playing in that defensive midfield position. For example, we know Gyro has a decent pass on him. He might be, if you drop Kouate back into the centre-back position, as you suggested, which I think is a good suggestion and might be something we should look at ahead of the next game if Anderson's not back, then you can bring in someone who can do those decent passes. And I think it's time for Luka to possibly be having a rest, at least. I think that's very much the tone of the feedback we've been getting from listeners as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Look, and I think, you know, to kind of wrap that up a little bit, I think we should always factor in, I don't know exactly when the injury happened. It might be out there, but I didn't see it. In terms of when it actually happened. So in terms of prep time for the game, in terms of working on a different plan, in terms of looking at that situation and saying, okay, well, you know, James, you're playing today, but we don't really have time to work on a different way of playing. I think it's understandable, and I would hope come Tuesday and certainly come the weekend, we've worked on some different options if Anderson is out. And with a hamstring injury, you would expect him to remain out, I think. Go on, Nick, quickly.
But would Tompkins not be in the training sessions anyway and see how we play and learn from that?
Yeah, but you can't.
Do you know what I mean?
You can't ask a player to do something that another player does if he's not as capable of doing it. You know, I'm not saying Tompkins couldn't, but you know, he think about the other things that Anderson and Gaye do as well, that they both are comfortable running with the ball from the defence. Sometimes you'll see them making an overlapping run a little bit, you know, like Wilder had going on at Sheffield United a couple of seasons back, that kind of stuff. You know, that's, you know, you see them popping up in different positions because they're confident, comfortable players on the ball. I think either of those two could play in midfield if they wanted to. They are that good on the ball. So
yeah, look at,
I just don't think Tompkins really has that attribute. So I understand what you're saying, Nick, but I think you should never ask a player to do something that he isn't capable of doing. So
yeah, and just to cement what you were saying is, look at Gaye's goal against Burnley last week. It came from a rebound from an Anderson shot, so they were both up there.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, that's exactly what we're talking about. So, but look, that's the challenge, you know, and that's the challenge that Vieira has. You know, you can quite see when he's got his, you know, he's a full team available for him. It looks like an embarrassment of riches and how to fit them all in. But, you know, a couple of key injuries, a couple of key players out, you know, you really do have to rethink. And, you know, this will happen throughout the course of the season. We weren't ever going to go the rest of the season unbeaten and never going to go the rest of the season with a poor performance. Those things will happen. And it's about understanding. You know, I felt, you know, my kind of sum up from the game was, it's a welcome reminder to keep our feet on the ground. We've been, in a way, spoilt with some really good quality football, where even when we haven't got the wins, we've been the dominant party. And we started this game dominating Villa. You know, the goal came at a horrible time and from a really frustrating source yet again, which is definitely something we'll talk about. But, you know, I think, you know, it's important to keep some perspective. And, you know, Vieira, and you know, said at the end of the game that, you know, he was kind of just not pinning the result on the absence of Anderson. That was his kind of response. And he said that obviously Anderson had played all the games. He's an important player, but he felt that we have enough players to play better than we did against Villa. And I think that is a very much a key observation. You can talk about the missing players, but Vieira is absolutely right. You know, he's hit the nail on the head. We are capable of playing a lot better than we did yesterday. So let's start talking about some of the other things that didn't quite go to plan. And we got to talk about Michael Olise, a player that, you know, I want to see start, and I want to see start on a regular basis because I think he offers more than Jordan Ayew in that position. But we saw yet again starting and having Ayew on the bench that Olise's impact was just not as noticeable. You know, he wasn't dealing with a tiring defence. He wasn't, you know, dealing with an in-game situation where he only had to focus for maybe 20 minutes to get things right. He's, you know, it's a very different thing to play a full 90-minute game in a Premier League at his age, given his experience. And whilst we know the talent's there, the impact certainly isn't the same when he starts us off the bench. Now, we're only looking at a very small set of data in terms of starting, is it two games, I think, he started this year? So this season shouldn't really be thinking too much about it and overanalyzing it. But, you know, Chris, what was your view of on Olise's performance in the game and what he offered?
Well, I was happy to see him start. But I have to say, you know, that as I think I broadly agree, frankly, with what you've just said, Chris, with regard to the, you know, simply, at this stage, his best performances have been as an impact sub, and it's a different thing to, you know, go toe to toe with an opponent for 90 minutes because you're not dealing with people who are tiring. So, you know, that means that you've got to be matching them in terms of performance levels. And I also think that he just looked a little bit shy in this game. You know, there were a couple of specific challenges where, you know, it just looked to me like he pulled his punches a bit and, you know, could have been a bit more physical. Maybe that's where, you know, Ayew's greater experience and more physical game, albeit more limited game, you know, might have been more appropriate for this performance. You know, that's my immediate reaction.
Yeah, it certainly felt that way. And, you know, I think it's important, and I'll probably say this a few times today throughout the course of this analysis, and that is to look at our opponents and not ignore the part that they played in the situation. So, you know, Olise wasn't the only one who struggled for time on the ball and struggled to make an impact. You know, Zaha struggled on the other flank, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But, the two fullbacks for Villa in Matty Cash and Matt Target, they're very good players. They're very experienced at Premier League level. They know their job. They're confident on the ball, but they really do know how to mark a winger, you know. And Olise never really got away. He never really got that opportunity to kind of express himself. And you're quite right, Chris. He looked like a reserved performance. It looked like he didn't quite have that spark that was going to be needed to get past his fullback and start worrying him. And quite a lot of his time, you know, was spent tracking the fullback and trying to, I think, you know, understandably, he wanted to focus on offering the team something defensively. But, you know, we really wanted to see him stretch those legs. We wanted to see him twist the players this way and that and just back his ability. And I think, yeah, it was a slightly understated performance. Nick?
It's interesting to see that he had twice as many touches as Zaha and a lot more seemed to go through Olise, who didn't have a Tyrick Mitchell to back him up. Within 10 minutes, Will, his son, said to me he shouldn't start. Something was missing and we couldn't put our finger on it. And the second thing was he did seem very close to the touchline all the time. He didn't seem to want to take players on as much as he used to do. So, yeah, it's almost as if he was playing a different, completely different game to what he does when he comes on as an impact sub.
And yeah, well, the space wasn't there for him from the start of a game. That's no doubt about that, and that's how it works. And he's got to find a way of making his own space and enforcing his influence onto the game. He has to do that. He's still very young, and that will come as he gains in confidence. And I don't think he's got any lack of belief in his own ability. But it's interesting that observation that you make, and it's interesting for two reasons. Obviously, he's got different players in and around him, so. The players that came, Conor Gallagher likes to wander out to that side and get involved in the play there, that more often than not than drifting out to the left. But I think, behind Gallagher with Kouyaté and Milivojevic, the two of them did have poor games. Both of them were very poor in the first half and didn't really do much more in the second half. And obviously Luka was subbed as well, pretty early on, which we'll come to. But I think the main thing that you've kind of triggered for me is the realization that our attacking intent is so usually focused on the left side for Wilf. Whenever you kind of look at the stats on wherever you go for your stats, but who scored is a good example of a site that shows you that. We actually attacked, I think, let me get the figures up, actually. So in terms of attacking possession, 48% was down the right, 31% on the left, and it's usually the absolute opposite. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The first is I think we're trying to get a better balance, and we were trying to give Elise time on the ball. But, Villa, again, did such a good job in cutting off that supply to Wilf. The crossfield passes weren't there from Anderson, who usually plays, right side of the centre-back position, and his passes usually go from right to left on the diagonal and find Wilf, so we didn't do that. But we also didn't spend a lot of time passing through Mitchell and going down the flank and those two, Wilf and Tyreek interacting there. So that was an element of the game missing yesterday. And I think there was no intent from Palace to do that. We had the same individuals on the same side of the pitch, but Villa really did close out the space there and they really did cut off the passing angles. So Wilf was a peripheral figure for a lot of the game, but
No, so I'm just going to completely disagree with you about Kouyaté. I thought he had a very, very good game. He made some brilliant saving tackles. A couple of times he'd given the ball away, but he got back and got the ball back at the gate. But he won loads of aerials. His passing was good. He was carrying and missing Milivojevic as well, I thought he had a brilliant game, so I won't have anybody tell me that he had a bad game.
I think it's a cop-out, Nick, because I think it's, Luka's the Panto villain at the moment and had a really bad game. But, to say that Kouyaté struggled because of Luka is to me, it's exactly the same thing you can say the other way. You can go, okay, well, Luka struggled because of Kouyaté. And I thought Kouyaté's overall game was really poor by his standards. I think he didn't have any influence in there. He was bypassed by a lot. And I think what you're right in saying is that he had good moments in a game. A couple of fantastic tackles. He did some really good defensive work and some really good blocks. But he was reluctant to carry the ball. He too often went for a simple pass when a better pass was on, and ultimately was responsible for a midfield that was overrun for most of the game. So no, Nick, I'm not going to agree with you.
Well, defensively, he won more aerial battles than anybody else on the pitch. He had more tackles than pretty much anybody else on the pitch. So defensively, yes, going forward, perhaps you're right.
Yeah, I think that's why he's in there. If I'm honest, I kind of asked you that question a little bit earlier on with a kind of bit of the tongue in cheek, because I think he is in there because he just adds that extra little bit of height, doesn't he? And considering the problems we're having from set pieces, that's one of the reasons he's in there. But, I think for whatever reason that he struggled, and he wasn't the only one, I do think that centre of midfield, I don't think you can point the finger at one without pointing the finger at the other. Chris.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think that actually it's, you know, it's the combination of the two players that didn't work in this game. And, you know, we need to be looking at a new balance and a new way of playing. And, you know, we've done that with some of the other areas of the pitch. We've moved to, we've got someone like Gallagher now who gives a mobility in the offensive third that we just don't have elsewhere and haven't had for a number of years. At centre-back, we've had Anderson with the option of the long pass, and we haven't had a decent long passer since, I mean, I would say there was a period where Delaney managed to master it really, really effectively, albeit it was a very limiting, and it was a one-trick pony, but it was very effective for a period back in the day. And, you know, but in midfield, we need to be remodelling that. I think it's as simple as that. And it's not just the personnel, it's actually the style. We've got two destroyers there and we need a new balance.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, again, in defence of what Nick says, you know, it isn't. Kiyate did have a. I do think he was the one of the two who improved in the second half. I will say that much for sure. I think, you know, his influence in the game was greater in the second half, but perhaps the damage was done by that point. You know, and I think of the two, it's certainly Luka who kind of lost the discipline a bit. And I think when you factor in, you know, we'll talk about set plays, I'm sure, you know, we know we're about to, but when you factor in the fact he was back taking, you know, some corners and free kicks, and they were not good. You know, we wasted a lot of opportunities. Oh. When you factor that in as well, you know, I understand why the focus is on Luka. And, you know, statistically, you know, you can look at Kiyate and you can say he actually, you know, he had a good game statistically, but I felt, you know, he has a part to play in that midfield unit, and, you know, the stats don't always tell the full story. But, you know, that's what it's about. We all see things differently. I'm sure there are plenty sitting at home agreeing with Nick and disagreeing with me, which is absolutely fine. So let's talk about the subs before we have a quick... We'll kind of finish talking about the goals in a bit and some of the post-match stuff and general performance things. But let's focus really on the one of the key things that was discussed this week, and that's the substitutes. So the first sub for me is the kind of the big one. And that would be surprising to some because of the second sub. But I'll tell you why I think this was the big one. Because, you know, Luka, I think it's fair to say he was probably a red card risk because he'd picked up a yellow and he was making some silly fouls. And I think his head had gone a little bit. And I'm always a big fan of trying to get Eze on a football pitch. But for me, that was the wrong choice because, you know, we were losing a midfield battle already. And I think taking off Luka was the right call. But for me, you could have gone with Gyro, or you could have gone with Jeffrey Schlupp, or you could have gone with Will Hughes there. And I think that was the change that we were crying out for. Someone in the middle to get some, with, you know, to be disciplined, to get their foot on the ball, to calm things down, and also to give the rest of the team the license to push forward and go for the game. But Vieira's a brave manager, and, you know, we've seen the benefit of that already, and we've seen it not work, you know, once or twice as well. And I think this time the brave choice I applaud, but the decision I think was the wrong one. I think we very much lost our way until, you know, that kind of tactical shift a little bit later on when we started to create. Although I will question the second sub in terms of who went off, I would say that change of bringing Edward on and changing the way we were playing, that was a key one, because that's when we actually started to create and we eventually had a first shot on target around 80 minutes. But let's focus on the hour mark. Nick, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, just quickly on the Eze sub, I think part of it was to actually lift the crowd, because the crowd actually got a lot louder and got more behind the team the moment Eze came on. And you talked about red card risk. Do you think Wilf was a red card risk? Red card risk. having got that silly yellow in the first half as well.
I think there's a possibility there, but I mean, he you know, I think someone chucked the stats up somewhere. I think it was on social media that Wilf has had one red card in recent times, and it was for clapping sarcastically at a referee. You know, he did make a silly challenge, but I don't consider him a constant red card risk. You think the number of times Wilf's been on a yellow, and you just don't take him off. So I understand where you're coming from there, but you know, it was what it was. Chris?
Well, we needed to do something because we had been ineffective. We were behind in the game and we hadn't had a shot on target. In fact, we didn't have a shot on target for another 20 minutes. So I understand the urge to make an offensive change. And this certainly was designed to achieve that. I thought Eze linked up pretty well with Olise pretty quickly on and with Gallagher. So I'm not sure it was necessarily the wrong choice. I certainly agree that I wanted to see Hughes on, but I wanted to see him on from the start rather than necessarily as a substitute. So I defend that substitution. It certainly was a popular one in the ground. I don't think that lifting the crowd would necessarily have been Vieira's priority. It would have been to achieve a change in what was happening on the pitch. But it definitely lifted the crowd when we saw Eze back. That was a good moment.
No, it's good, and I just get a little bit concerned about. I mean, I want Eze back on the pitch, and you've got to give him minutes, right? You've got to play him for him to get back into form. The Eze of last season, at his peak, thinking about him on that pitch with the rest of the talent that we've got there playing the way we're playing, it's absolutely mouthwatering if we can get back to it. And so we might have to do things like this, and maybe take that risk. And you're quite right. Obviously the crowd were lifted, and he did get on the ball, even though he understandably a little bit rusty. But for me, I think if you're going to bring him on there, then perhaps maybe that the answer is to make two changes there. And I don't have my knives out for Olise at all. I think he's a fantastic young player and will be a tremendous asset for us over the next few years. But
you've just moved out. I bet you haven't even unpacked your knives yet, have you?
exactly. They're still in a box. That's right. But you know what I mean? He's that to me. You look at the hour mark, and the sub came later on. The 72-minute sub, and it was Zaha off for Edward. And Wilf didn't have a great game, and he was marked out of it for a lot. But for me, the obvious change at that point was Olise, just to say, hey, you gave it a good run, but you've been ineffective. Let's make the obvious change. Get Edward on for that. And it was obviously Olise went off with about a minute to go for Ayew. So I didn't think, for me, I didn't think that was the right sub either. I think getting Edward on was good, and it wasn't long before he got a shot away, and I really like him as a player. But I suppose, again, hindsight, managing with hindsight, we're armchair managers or in the stand managers, if you like, or whatever. But we're, I look back at that and I think if you're going to make that change to get Eze on the pitch, then I think you can make a double change at that stage and still do something with the centre and midfield. Get Eze on, excuse me, but take Olise off for him and get Luka off and put somebody with some legs in midfield. Because that's still, to me, where the game was won and lost.
Is it a little bit concerning for you that Edward seems to be predominantly the player on the wing now and maybe not in the middle, where perhaps he could have been a little bit more effective than Benteke? Mm. Benteke wasn't awful. He had a couple of brilliant shots and definite penalty shout just before he did his scissor sideways kick. I doubt if it got seen on any replay simply because of the brilliant shot afterwards, although it was straight down the keeper's throat. But Benteke wasn't as effective as usual, which was a shame considering how well he played against Burnley. I'm concerned that Edward's going to be played out of position because he's the sort of player that could be the one moving into those spaces and be on the end of penetrating balls into the box, along the floor, through the middle, not necessarily crosses.
Yeah, honestly, Nick, I do think you're right to some degree, and I do have some concerns about it. If I think there was a way of not changing the system too much to accommodate Edward and Benteke together centrally, I would advocate for it, but I think we would probably lose too much. So it's got to be one or the other. I just think it's a case right now of Benteke's the man who's got the shirt, and quite rightly so. He's been scoring at a decent rate under Vieira, but I think once again it goes back to the age old argument for Benteke, which is you've got to give him the right service. And seeing him run through the way he did, when he picked the ball up just past the halfway line in the first half, didn't he? And ran at the defence, and but for some really good defending by Mings, would have got a shot away as well. And called it out again. In terms of the way Villa played, Mings don't like him when he's against us, but tremendous defender for a lot of the time. I know he's got a mistake in him here and there, but he was absolutely superb against us, and he's just so driven and so focused. I'm a big admirer of his, and he played Benteke really well. But I understand what you're saying, Nick, and no, I don't particularly like Edouard starting the game out wide. And I think if you are going to play him there, it's really important to give him that license to drift in field. But again, that you can start talking about all sorts of options there, which is still a great thing to be talking about, let's face it. But you could have dropped Elise off, put Edouard on that side as well. There's all sorts of things that you could do, but I just think this one, and it's not much in it. It's not me criticising the manager outright and saying he was absolutely bang wrong and it's inexplicable what he did. I just think, on this occasion, with the way the game went, those perhaps weren't as effective as other changes might have been. But we will never know. So look, goal one. What is it, guys? What is the problem with set pieces? This one... It's again. It's somebody at the back post scoring. It's never the first phase, really. Well, not never. It's rarely the first phase, other than against Burnley, where we're losing it. But I don't know what to say about it. Surely it's got to be something psychological now, because I know. I mean, let's talk about it, Chris. How do you feel in the crowd when the opposition get a corner right now? How do you feel?
Here we go again.
Yeah,
and it's just jittery, and it's that's absolutely the case. Everyone around you has got their fists curled up really hard. It's horrible, absolutely horrible, because there's just a feeling of inevitability, and frankly, they must feel that on the pitch as well. It looks like they do.
Got to, haven't they? It's so disappointing, and I hate feeling that way. I hate feeling like, there's this inevitability about us conceding. And it's some distance. I can't remember the stats about it. I'm sorry for not having the time to look it up. But, I think we're way ahead in that table of goals conceded against set pieces, corners and free kicks. And, Vieira had this to say in terms of the fact that Palace are focusing on set pieces in training, hopefully, defending and attacking. Because he said that, this is obviously something we are focusing on at the minute. Obviously, we need to do a little bit more work on that. We are there. We want to compete, but we don't do it well enough. It was really disappointing to concede a goal again on the set pieces. We never found a way back into the game. We didn't create enough. Our passing wasn't good enough in that game. Talked about improvements after the break. Might as well talk about the rest of his comments now. He said we created in the second half. We tried to stretch them a little bit more, having people running in behind the back four. In the first half, everything was a little bit comfortable for them. It's disappointing because we didn't play the way we know we can. I think we played against a really good side who made it difficult for us. We were quite slow today, didn't create enough, didn't defend well enough. And when you don't defend well enough, it's always difficult, as you have to hope you can get something from the game. So clear Vieira is an unhappy man with that, but also clear that they recognise the issue and they're focusing on it in training. But Nick, can you train out something if it's a psychological problem? How do you get around it?
Well, is it psychological? Because looking back at it, we had too many players going for the ball and not thinking about the players that were around them. You only need one player to go for the ball. And then another player can be stood next to target. It's the communication in there, and hopefully that will come as the players get used to each other. As we said, it's all new faces in there. So maybe it will come with time. Too many players going for that ball on the second phase.
Well, that's why it's psychological to me.
Tate Hill gobbing it in there, saying, "No, you stay there. I'm going for this."
Yeah, well, that's why it's psychological to me. I think you can shout as much as you like in the back four and or the back 10 if we're defending a set piece. You can shout as much as you like, but I think when you have multiple players going for the same ball, that's because of that desire to see it clear, and it's a discipline thing. And I think the desperation not to concede from a set piece. I think to me the sensible thing to do is to look at the fact we don't concede from every set piece. So we're capable of getting it right. We're capable of doing the right things. So, you know, take the desperation out of it. You know, it's not what it's about. And also, I'm sure the manager and the players are going through this, because, you know, you only have to get the videos up and look at the fact that it's predominantly on a second phase of play. And you can kind of pick a handful of players who, after the first phase has kind of happened, start to drift and start to go back to their positions or start to think about springing an attack, which is, you know, it's great in some senses, but until you've seen that ball clear, you know, you've got to be marking your man. And whether or not they're doing zonal marking or man-to-man or a mixture of both, like most people do, I simply don't know. I can't tell you. And I suppose that's probably the biggest concern for me. But look, moving on, you know, there wasn't too much other than that in the game, was there, that you know, we had to be concerned about in terms of what Villa were doing. It was just all about the fact that we couldn't make good use of the ball. And we tried and we tried and we tried, and we're chasing the game. And as often happens when you chase the game, a break from Villa, and there's a great finish from McGinn. An absolutely fantastic goal. Can't really do too much about it. You know, Nick, is there anything about that second goal that struck you that we could be doing better? Or is it just one of those things that happens when you chase a game?
I've big upped him, but perhaps Kouyaté could have been on McGinn. He was rather free there, wasn't he? But yeah, when you're chasing the game, it's going to be looser at the back, isn't it? So it is what it is.
You know, I don't have too much, you know, to criticise. It's never nice to concede a goal. And, you know, you could argue that there's plenty we could do defensively in terms of the shape and structure. But, you know, that far into the match, you're not really thinking about that. You know, the good thing about Vieira's Palace for me is that we are always thinking about getting back into games. We never accept defeat, we never accept our lot, and this will always be a consequence of that in some games, and it will happen again this season when, you know, if we don't do the right things and we find ourselves behind in a game, we'll get caught again chasing a match, and you know, we have to accept that. And this was one of those games. Look, it was a nice consolation goal from Mark Gay, good instincts getting forward, you know, but I don't think we can argue too much when we take 80 minutes to have a shot on target in a game. You know, you can't take a lot of comfort from a consolation goal, and you also, you know, can't really feel aggrieved about losing a match. You know, we've dropped points this season in games where we just thought, you know, we should have had 3 points here, but this was not one of them.
Who got the assist, Chris?
It's Cenk Kouyaté, wasn't it?
Yes, there you go.
Sorry, I just had to get that in there. Stats, didn't it? Yeah.
Can I just ask that we don't get a first-time Premier League referee again, because he was rubbish.
Oh, yeah.
I know we don't want to go on about refs, but he was particularly poor. He even got the red card wrong, didn't he?
Yeah, he got the red card wrong for them, which was, again, you know, he got that wrong. There's the time he didn't play advantage when Gallagher, I'm 100% certain, would have gone on to score. He got a lot wrong. You could see that's somebody who understandably had nerves, but I was watching a game with my partner, and I said to her, like, she's like, oh, do we not like this referee? And I said, well, you know, we don't know, but, you know, why is it us that has to get a first time Premier League ref? Because, you know, something's going to go wrong here. And I thought he ref the game very poorly, but, you know, it's his first game in the Premier League. There's nothing he could do. He's a human being. He's going to be anxious, and he was just too quick with that whistle on too many occasions. And then the frustrating thing is he lacked the consistency to be like that throughout the course of the game. He followed the directives of letting the game flow just completely at the wrong times for us.
And it's worth just saying that, again, we fell victim to a hell of a lot of time wasting. This was almost as bad as Brentford. Villa were down, especially their keeper, pretending to have hurt himself while making a save. And yes, okay, so we did get actually a couple of extra minutes added on, but I'm sure they wasted about 10, to be honest.
Was that where the keeper threw the ball out and then the referee just dropped the ball at his feet rather than giving us a throw?
That's the one.
Yeah. That was very odd, because it was nothing that we did, but again, another thing that the ref did, which was a little bit inexplicable. So look, let's talk about performances. I think in terms of, a few that I will pick out, you know, I'll certainly acknowledge that Luka had a poor game. I think, you know, for me, Alisa really struggled. Wilf wasn't great, if we're blunt about it either. So I think, you know, those are the ones that struggled for me. players that I thought did really well. I thought Mark Gay was excellent once again. I think Conor Gallagher did a pretty decent job in there. In particular, I thought his passing was really strong, and he often played the kind of sensible passes. And I think a lot went through him. But you can kind of look at the front players, the attacking players, and their kind of lack of seeing the ball and lack of key moments in the game. You can look at those and say that the failures really came in an attacking sense behind them, which is kind of hidden by a lot of stats. But yeah, anyone that you want to pick out, Nick? I know you picked out Kiyate. You thought had a good game as well. Anyone else that you want to kind of pick out, either good or bad?
No, I think they were just all pretty under par compared to what we've known. I just hope it's a kick up the bum that they need to say, okay, we've been playing really well. We've been getting results, albeit draws. But actually, we're going to have to try a bit harder in this league and not take... I don't know whether they took things for granted that... I know there's no easy games in the Premier League, but Villa had come off a terrible run of results. All right, they've got new manager bounce, which we'll find again. Hopefully not against Man United next weekend. But it seemed like a 75% performance rather than a 100% performance. And I'm not sure I can put my finger on why.
It was certainly flatter. It was certainly flatter. But we also, we just didn't have any luck in this game, whereas we had some luck in some of the previous ones. Benteke had a couple of really good opportunities. I think he performed very well, actually. And, on a different day, some of those shots would have been shots on target and would have gone in the goal. We were just unfortunate with that. He linked up really well with Conor Gallagher. So there's definitely... reasons to be cheerful and not to panic, but this was flatter than previously and we need to improve.
For sure. Okay, well, let's end the show by getting into some listener reaction. So we've got some four-word reviews for you, and I will start, Chris will go next and Nick to follow. And that's because we didn't talk about it before the show, so I made it sound like it was me just talking as part of the show, but there you go. I've ruined it.
Going meta.
Yeah, I've gone meta. You're quite right. Love to go meta. Why not, eh? So the first one from our very own Cara was, only need one, shite.
And Patrick says, that's our Patrick, says, need to bounce back.
Matt Camp at Not To Camp, my son's first game. I hope he's not like other kids and decides to support Villa. Because you hear that, don't you? Their dads take them to a game and they decide to support the opposition for the rest of their lives.
Let's hope not. One more point. The wonderful fanzine now back on sale. Went with Reminiscent of Roy Era.
And Mike Deacon said, where was Will Hughes?
Richard Tate says, clean sheet required Tuesday.
Vieirasaurus. He's gone with a lot of words here, but it kind of works. Vieirasaurus went with Kiyate / Luca doesn't work. He's claiming that's four words and one symbol. I'll let him off.
Mark Davis says it's only a blip.
Ralph triple slash or Ralph // still can't defend corners.
Leif Anderson's forehead went with I missed our goal, and then there's an aubergine emoji and some drops.
Sorry. Then we've got Robert Bailey. Robert Bailey says, outthought, outfought.
Oh. Eagle for life, backwards, missed Anderson and Jimmy.
Oh, well. I've just noticed that's eagle for life, backwards. Ages I've been going, Ephil Roth Ilagile.
Algae.
Well, algae, yeah. There you go. Well done, Nick. Thank you for enlightening
me.
That's
why I'm a teacher.
Exactly. Simply Steve-O went with first real mistake selection.
And linked to that, C. Adave, which is actually Nick Russell, says, without Jimmy Mack, rudderless.
Richard Volker says, honeymoon is over, baby.
Michael Middleton went with defend set pieces better.
And then back to the midfield theme, Hothi, the Brum Eagle, says, get rid of Luca.
And a very, very old friend of the show, King Vagabond Hole, When is Jimmy back?
There you go. Thank you for there were so many more of those, and we could only pick a selection. And it wasn't really a value judgment given the time that we had. It was just, you know, chop the list at a certain point. So there were some fantastic ones in there. Thank you to everybody who sent those in. Similarly, the questions, we've picked a few out. So let's start with Jake. That's Ebo, and he's saying, why does Kouyaté continually tell his teammates to pass back to our defence? So, Nick, I think you should take that question.
Because our defence are better at going forward than our midfield have been? I don't know. It's keeping possession. It's that whole, we've turned the possession stats round and can't seem to do anything with it. Who knows? But yeah. Keeping possession, they can't score if we've got the ball.
Listen, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And I'm one of those people who hates it when I'm in a crowd and everybody groans when we pass the ball back. But, you know, you sometimes have to. But I think Jake's quite rightly picking up on the, you know, the kind of, it's sometimes easy to take that simple option every time can sometimes be damaging if there's more options on. So I suppose the question really comes is, were there enough options of other passes for Kouyaté when he had the ball? And we'll have to leave that one open. Stan, who's often on YouTube with DR and T and Patrick, went with, why did he bring on IU on? What's the point? Look, it was a late sub, and I suppose we scored after it, Stan, so I'm not really sure other than that. But I think maybe, you know, Chris, what do you reckon? Maybe the argument is that the change could have been made earlier.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's got to be the point because, you know, and it, that later sub, that usually you do that to waste time, whereas we were behind in the game, so you wouldn't expect that. But then, you know, maybe Vieira has a different view on IU's attacking contribution than some of our fan base. It could just be that.
Indeed. London Eagle went with, was Luca sporting a wide-fitting boot yesterday? And obviously, we've talked about Luca and I'll just leave that comment where it is and jump on to Peter Algar's comment where he asked the question, why did we buy Will Hughes if not to be a replacement for Maka? And Peter, I share that opinion, if I'm brutally honest about it. And I have to say that, you know, that seemed to be the logical decision that was being made there. And when we say a replacement for Maka, you know, I'm thinking, okay, yes, years ahead, you know, for the years ahead. I mean, that is definitely the case. But also, as I've said a few times on the show, I think, you know, at Maka's age, he's playing tremendously. But to ask him to do that week in, week out, throughout the course of a whole season, he just won't be able to because he will pick up injuries and he will be tired. And if you play a player when he's constantly tired, he picks up injuries. So it does seem like, you know, for the fact that Will Hughes hasn't played a minute, we have to respect the manager, you know, and the staff in general and say there's obviously a reason for that, whether Will Hughes' time playing, you know, with the academy at Watford because he fell out with the hierarchy there, whether the fact that he didn't have that proper pre-season and he hasn't been playing, you know, at the right level for a long time has had an impact. That's the only thing that I can think of. But, you know, hopefully it's sooner rather than later for me. Nick?
The good news is I sit quite near the tunnel. That's not the good news. But when he came out, he does seem quite happy. He was smiling and laughing when the teams came out. So he doesn't look despondent about it. So that's good news.
Indeed. On a similar theme, Chris, Keith Seri has asked, are we shit without Maka?
Well, I didn't think we were shit last week. So I think it's too early to say. We definitely miss him. He's been playing out of his skin this season. And I think we've discussed at length the fact that, you know, there needs to be some kind of alternative way of running our midfield and that we've got different players who we ought to experiment with. And hopefully we'll see Vieira do that in the weeks before Maka returns.
Indeed, and I do think it's a good time to mention again that we should consider, you know, look, let's face it, the way Palace have played for the majority of this season has been a surprise to us. So I do think it was probably a surprise to a fair proportion of the division as well. That surprise is now gone. We've now played a number of games. You know, the scouts for the opponents will be looking at what we do well and what we don't do well. So their game plans will be shifting and changing. So we're entering a spell of games where we're thinking we should be picking up decent numbers of points here. And we have, you know, we're pushing ourselves up the table. We've done really well. But You know, we have to be able to be flexible. We have to be aware that the surprises we've sprung on the division won't last forever. And we've got to keep thinking and keep being creative. And listen, I've got every confidence we'll do that. But this was a game where, you know, I do think our opposition approached the game better than we did in terms of how to get the win. And finally, Leif Anderson's forehead has asked, how's the house going? I'm sure as many of you have experienced when buying a house, and I've just bought my first, and thank you for referencing it. And but yeah, finding out just how much needs to get done. Oh my God, guys, it's just the worst, you know. But you know, you spend a bunch of money to get yourself a house, and then you go in, and then you have to spend a bunch of money to make it livable to your own standards. It's interesting. You go and view a property, and furniture hides a multitude of sins, doesn't it?
Found the problems behind the radiators yet?
Not yet. I mean, I need to bleed the radiators. The biggest problem I got at the moment, which is being dealt with tomorrow morning, is all the plumbing in the kitchen needs to be redone so I can actually plumb in washing machine and a dishwasher. So,
do you know where your sub cook is?
I definitely know where that is, Nick. Found that, yeah. And, but yeah, so, yeah, £350 going tomorrow and a complete redo of that. So there you go. At some point, I need to probably redo the electrics. But that's house buying for you. Anyone knows how to get me some cheap carpets, give me a shout. but there you are. So, yeah, thank you to everybody who got in touch. Again, small selection of the questions, but really love getting your contact. And I think that we're going to leave the show there. So thanks to everybody listening. And obviously, as I just mentioned, everyone who got in touch. And we can't use everything, but it all helps. It all builds the show around, you know, that content and your thoughts and feelings, those things you express to us on social media, on all the different ways of talking to us. We read it all. We take it all in. And yeah, you keep contributing, keep getting involved. We love it. The preview team will, of course, be with you in the week. They'll look back at Tuesday's game against Leeds United and then obviously ahead to the game on Sunday against Manchester United. As ever, there is plenty more content for you across all our social accounts and a wealth of live and recorded shows for you over on YouTube, including instant match reaction and a chance for you to get involved. So find us on everything by searching Back of the Nest, like, subscribe and be merry. Until next time, come on, you Palace. It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This season, we have teamed up with FansBet, the fan-led sports betting company committed to supporting charities and causes which are important to fans. Do check them out at fansbet.com and claim your bet £10, get £10 free and 50 free spins welcome offer. To claim your welcome offer, visit register.fansbet.com/backofthenest. Our chosen charity partner is Sports in Mind, and by using FansBet, you'll be helping us support the great work they do. Terms and restrictions apply. Full details on site. 18 plus only. Please do gamble responsibly. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And please check out FansBet's responsible gambling tools.